Rosh Chodesh Elul is a opportune time to focus on Shalom Bayis. I've been giving a series on Shalom Bayis and describing in great detail the various ways that one could express love to the spouse. Tonight, I want to describe and go into great detail the way of expressing love and Ahava through the means of helping each other out, doing services for each other, assisting around the house, inside, outside the house. And Elul is a wonderful time to discuss this. As we know, the famous Rashi Tevos, Elul stands for Ani L'Dodi V'Dodi Li. Now each person is a dear, loved one to each other. And as we focus on our relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu as a marriage, which we've discussed over the past number of weeks, it's a great time to work on our own marriage and in our own home, how we're good friends and lovers, helping each other out. And moreover, as Elul is a preparation for the Yontif of Rosh Hashanah, Yom HaDin, where we call out HaMelech, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a king, the king of the universe, it's a great time to reflect on our roles as king and queen in the home. And we've been seeing a very strong parallel, correlation between the relationship of man and woman, husband and wife, how it parallels the relationship of Kadosh Baruch Hu and Bnei Yisrael. And if we take this really to the nth degree, so Klai Yisrael and the Kadosh Baruch Hu's meeting place is the Mishkan, is the Beis HaMikdash. So that would dictate that our home is like a mini Beis HaMikdash. In a similar fashion to how we refer to the Beis Knesset as a Mikdash Ma'ate, a small, a miniature Beis HaMikdash for the community, so the Bayis, one's house, is a miniature, a mini Beis HaMikdash, Mikdash Ma'at, for the family. It's our place where husband and wife come together. And the greater scheme of the Beis Knesset is where a community comes together with Hashem. The Beis HaMikdash is a national place where everyone comes together with Hashem. And there are many parallels how we see that the house is very much modeled after the Beis HaMikdash. For one, the table, the shulchan, that we eat on is compared to Mizbeach. As they would place food, the Kohen would place food on the Mizbeach, and it would get eaten, it would get burnt up. So to the food that's placed on the Shulchan, it's eaten up, it's like a Mizbeach. This is the reason why there's a practice, even a halacha, brought down the Gemara Brachos, that one is supposed to place salt on their bread and have salt on the table, because just like the Mizbeach, every single carbon had salt sprinkled on it. So to the table, which is a Mizbeach, has to have salt on the table. Rosh Hashanah is around the corner, and the Ramah brings down the practice to dip the apple in the honey and dip the chal in the honey. So there's a question, well, if you're dipping that chal in the honey, do you have to also dip it in salt? Some say no, the honey replaces the salt. Some say no, you need to put honey and salt together. Rosh Shlomo Zalman says that you leave the salt on the table, but you dip the chal in honey only. But we see from all this, how important it is and essential to have the salt on the table, because it's similar to the Mizbeach, which had salt sprinkled on the Mizbeach. In fact, the Chassam Sofer said that at nighttime, there is no inyan to have salt on the table. My in-laws, for example, have this practice that they don't have salt on the table Friday nights, only during the daytime. Because since Karbanos were not brought on the Mizbeach at nighttime, so there's no inyan of having salt at nighttime. Many others have a salt at nighttime, even though in the Beis HaMikdash there is no karbanos at nighttime, the house is a little bit different, and even at nighttime the table is considered a mizbeach and requires salt. So that's why we also, people are very machmir not to sit on a table. The table has a din of mizbeach, we don't sit on mizbeachos, it's bizayon to mizbeach, so it's a bizayon to sit on your table. This is one of the reasons why the halacha that when benching, a person should not leave a knife out on the table. Two reasons brought down, but one of the reasons are because when the Mizbeach is built, you can't use a knife or anything to chisel out the stone. The stone has to be natural. You can't use a knife. So too, there shouldn't be a knife on the table while benching, at least. Again, there's a lot more to discuss here. But just that there's that inyan, that connection, without discussing any further, not having the knife on the table during benching, because it's the table's parallel, it's modeled after the Mizbeach. And that's exactly what the Gemara in Chagigah and Maseches Brachos tell us, that one's table is mechaper on his, as Mizbeach was. That the Gemara points out that the Pasuk is describing Mizbeach and then changes to talk about the Shulchan, all in one Pasuk. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish is the Gemara Chagigah Daf Chaf Zayin Amud Aleph, that both Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, Damru Tevayu, both of them hold, Bizman Shebeis HaMikdash Kaim Mizbeach Mechaper Al Ha'odah. When the Beis HaMikdash was around, it was built, it was functioning, so the Mizbeach was Mechaper in a person's sin. Achshav, now that there is no Beis HaMikdash, Shulchano Shulodim Mechaper Alav. A person's table is what's Mechaper. By him eating, him serving guests, and him having Shalom Bayis, all that is Mechaper. And so now, in essence, your dining room has just transformed into the Beis HaMikdash. It had transformed into the Azara, with the table being the focal point, as the Mizbeach was the focal point where the most activity was taking place on the Mizbeach. So it's in the dining room. It becomes a Beis HaMikdash, or a Beis HaMikdash Ma'at. And if you can really internalize this idea, if you can really internalize and envision this to be reality, not just some folk tale, but really, the Beis HaMikdash, the house is a small Beis HaMikdash, the table is a miniature Mizbeach, then the amount of respect and composure you're going to have around your table is going to be tremendously impacted by this. If you could just walk into your, every time you walk into your house, this is a Beis HaMikdash. You walk into your dining room and this is the Mizbeach. If you could really ingrain that feeling into yourself and into your children, the Kedusha that's permeating throughout the walls of the dining room, can you imagine the Shalom Bayis, the decrease in the fighting over seats, who sits next to Tati, who's Abba, Daddy, Mommy, fighting over who gets first dessert, fighting who says the first of our Torah. If you just put the idea that the dining room is the Beis HaMikdash and the table is Mizbeach, that's going to change your perspective and trickle down to your children and change their entire perspective. Now, it's not only the dining room and the table that's the Mizbeach. The candelabra that the wife lights the candles, that's the menorah on the Beis HaMikdash. There's a big inin for women to bake challahs Erev Shabbos. It's modeled after Lechem HaPanim. Now, the Lechem HaPanim consisted of 12 loaves of bread. Ours is only 2. So listen to this practice the Gura had. The Gura would, at every single meal, he would cut both challahs in half. Why? Because you have Friday night, you have 2 challahs. You cut them both in half, now you have twice, you have 4. So now you have 4 challahs after cutting them, 4 challahs at each of the 3 meals, 4 times 3 is 12. So the Gemara explained to have the keneged lechem apanim. So the challah that's on our table now, that represents a lechem apanim. There were ovens in the Beis HaMikdash that was used to make bread and matzah. The bedroom, the house, is the most intimate room, of course, that is symbolic of the Kodesh Kedoshim. The 2 kruvim facing each other represent husband and wife. It's hidden behind the curtain, behind closed doors. Nobody's allowed in there. There's a certain sanctity in the bedroom. In my house, we're very, very makbid that our kids' friends don't go into the bedroom, our bedroom. Our kids are allowed in the bedroom, but we don't let the kids go. Make sure their doors close. The place, that's Kodesh Kedoshim. No one needs to see the bedroom. It's a place that's like the Kodesh Kedoshim. No one needs to see inside the Kodesh Kedoshim. It's the most intimate place. So the bedroom is the Kodesh Kedoshim, the dining room is the Azara with the Mizbeach, and then there's a menorah, and then there's a Shulchan, the Lechem upon him. There's a Kira in the Beis HaMikdash, there's a sink, as we have sinks in our house. So we see from all these connections of the house and the Beis HaMikdash, there's a physical parallel between the house, and there's also a spiritual correlation. As the Shekhinah rests in the Beis HaMikdash, the Chazal tells us that the Shekhinah rests amongst Ish for Isha, as long as they are Shalom Bayis, and there's the Yud Kei, the Shekhinah is there. If Lo Aleinu, Rachman Atzlan, the Shekhinah is not there, the Yud Kei of the names disappear, the Ish loses the Yud, and the Isha loses the Hei, becomes Eish, it becomes fire, becomes tragic. So, but the when things are good and they're getting along with each other, they're treating each other nicely, the Shalom Bayis and the Shechina is ever present in the house as it was in the Beis HaMikdash. So now, after establishing that the house is like a Beis HaMikdash, it's a Mikdash Ma'at, who's the Baal Bas? Who's the Baal Bas of the Beis HaMikdash? Who runs this show there? Well, of course, the Kohanim. The Kohanim are doing all the work in the Beis HaMikdash. This means you, as the Baal HaBayis of your own home, that means you are the Kohanim. And you should be doing all the work. As the Kohanim did in the Beis HaMikdash, you should be doing the work in your house as well. People think that in their home they should rest. It's malchus for them. They're the king. They get to relax. They can kick back on their electric massage chair and put their feet up on the coffee table and read a sefer or a newspaper or play games on your phone, Candy Crush, Angry Birds, whatever the newest game is, and be served as kings, as malachim. I know what it's like to be served like a king. Recently, I went away for Shabbos to take a little break for the summer. It's been a busy year, busy summer, Baruch Hashem. So I went to a friend of mine who has a very nice, comfortable house up in the mountains. And two oldest kids are in camp, so we took the four kids who were home. And it was mamish living like kings and queens. Come in, and the kids had their babysitters taking care of all the kids, and there was a cleaning service, and then there were chefs, and then there were waiters and waitresses. I didn't lift a finger. Mamish, the whole Shabbos, I just rested, relaxed. I really felt like a king. But the truth is, you feel like a king when you're a guest. When you're a guest, when someone else is serving you, then you feel like a king. But when you are the host, you have responsibilities. Then you're actually being, you're working hard. You have responsibilities, you have chores to do. Being a kohen, being a king, is not an easy job. I mean, people think a king gets to relax. A kohen gets to relax. It's the opposite. When you're a guest, then you get to relax. Everyone does things for you. But when you're the host, when you're Baal Bayis, when you're the kohen, when you're the king, then you have the responsibility. You don't get the rest then. It requires a lot of strenuous work, a lot of tedious work, a lot of cleaning and getting dirty and getting covered in blood. In fact, the Gemara explains how big a kavod it was for the kohen to be knee-deep in blood filling up in the base of Mikdash. That's not living a king, but that was a kavod to be drenched with the blood of the animals. That's not, I don't find that enjoyable. And in fact, we learned in the summer kol in Eish, we learned Hilchos Shechita, Maseches Chulin. At the end, we took a trip to a schlachthaus upstate and to Pella Poultry. I've never been to one before, and I was told chickens are not so bad, they're not so bloody. So after we saw the whole process of how they checked them, and they cleaned them, and they salted them, and then at the end, we finally saw Shechita. And there's blood all over the walls, and the individual who was the Rav who was showing us around pushed me close up to see the Shochet. Mamish, like 2 feet away, even closer, watching the Shochet shecht one chicken after the next chicken after the next chicken. And thank God they gave us these coats, and there was blood all over, and the blood got all over my shoes. And I smelled bad, and it was very poor planning on my part. After that, I had to go to a chasana and to l'chaim. I didn't realize I got home probably how bad I smelled from a schlachthaus. So that's what it means to be a king, to be a kohen. It's a dirty job being a kohen. It's a dirty job being a Baal Bayis, to be a husband, to be a father, to be responsible for the house. Malchus doesn't mean you're taking easy on the couch, attached to your phone, while your wife is slaving in the kitchen, and she's cooking, and she's baking, and she's cleaning, she's doing laundry, she's folding laundry, she's washing dishes, she's making the kids lunch for school, packing their bags, doing homework with them, studying for tests, going to PTA, going shopping, paying the bills, etc. That's not what it means to be a king. That's not what it means to be a husband or a father, to sit back and relax and someone else do the work for you. You want to relax, you to go on a vacation, be a guest somewhere, that's when you relax. But when you're in your own home, and when you're a king, when you're the kohen, you need to take responsibility. Real malchus is actually avdus. To be a king
To be a leader, you're really a slave of the people. Buying a slave means buying a master, the Gemara says. Ka'kona eved ivri, ka'kona adon latmo. When you buy a servant, a slave for yourself, you're in essence buying a master. Because you have to start serving him, treating him good. So you're going out shopping, getting the food that he wants. Now you have a housekeeper, so you pay the housekeeper, she does all the work around the house. But you have to get her food because you don't want her bringing trafe, so you're going shopping, she wants this and she wants that. That's a responsibility. Being an adon really means you're being a slave. When you're kona avid ivri, you're actually kona an adon, a master, because he's going to start bossing you around. When you have responsibilities, you work hard. Mm-hmm. Now, top CEOs are slaves to their job. They make a lot of money, have nice houses, nice cars, nice vacations, but they worked hard together. They slave together. They work 20-hour days to build themselves up. To be the top of the world, it takes a lot of responsibility, a lot of effort. To be the top of your house, to be the Kohen of your house, to be the Melech of your house, you need responsibility. You need to slave. You look at the Pesukim when it comes to Avraham Avinu. We're at the beginning of Parshas Vayera. He's so excited, finally some guests come. And keep in mind that, of course, Avraham was recovering from a surgery, from the Bris Milah. And what does he do? You read the Pesukim. He finally saw Vayar. Vayar still across, and he ran to go get them. And he says, Yukach Mamayim. And then he tells them to go get bread and food. Vayimahar Avraham. Sorry, he's running to Sarah. He's telling her, Vayimahar Mahari, hurry up, bake challah for them, and get a meat ready for them. And everyone's busy running around. When you're a host, there's a responsibility you have there. It takes a lot of hard work. There's a lot of slaving around to do there. That's the responsibility of being a husband or wife, a father or mother. Being a host, it's responsible. The Gemara in Brachos Daf Dalam Amud Aleph tells us that David HaMelech said, Amar David Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, Lo Chasid Ani, I'm not a Chasid, Shekol Malchei Mizrach U'Ma'ariv, all the kings of the east, the kings of the west, Yoshvin Agudas Agudas Bechvodam, they sit in honorable positions, respectable positions, Vani mi yodai meluchlochos bedam uvshpir uvshuya. My hands are dirty with blood and checking maros. Kedei latar ish labayla. I'm here trying to say this woman's tar for her husband. I'm here getting dirty with blood like the Kohen got dirty in the base of Migdash. David HaMelech, who represents Malchus. Malchus David. He was busy there with the nitty gritty, with details, with halachas of a husband to wife, with Hilchos Nida. That's what you would expect of David HaMelech. Now, it's a wonderful thing helping out, but you would think a posek, a rav. This is David HaMelech doing this. Being a king doesn't mean you get to sit back and enjoy life. Being a king, being a Kohen, means you have a responsibility. You can get things done in this world. And in your own house, you are the king. You are the Kohen. It's Mamleches Kohanim. It's your job to make sure everything is taken care of. Not just to delegate to your wife, to delegate to your kids, to delegate to your housekeeper. In fact, the Mishnah Ksuba says if a person has multiple housekeepers to delegate different jobs, the woman has to have some responsibility. The Mishnah says because if she's nothing to do, then it leads to bad things. But also because if you're a balabasta, if you are a mother, the head of the household, you have to have responsibilities. That's what it means to be a melech and a malka, a king and a queen. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was very against sending a bachrim to learn in a yeshiva with a dormitory unless he had an unhealthy shalom bias in the house. But if the parents got along nicely and there's very nice shalom bias, he felt it's more important for the kids to be home and witness what it's like to have shalom bias. How a husband speaks to a wife, how a wife speaks to a husband, how parents speak to children. If you go to the dormitory, you learn very bad habits and don't learn how to make your bed and responsibilities. Things are done for you or things are not done and no one really cares. A lack of showering or cleaning clothes and cleaning the rooms. He thought you shouldn't go to the dormitory. You don't learn the responsibility of being a husband. If you have a healthy home, you should stay home.
help around the house and washing dishes and taking out garbage. And as an Eretz Yisrael, so a good friend of mine, he and I would go to his cousins in Renana. And now the way it worked at his cousin's house was, you know, his aunt worked very hard to cook Shabbos for us. And we did nothing. We just showed up. So she said the deal was we have to wash the dishes Friday night. So my friend, who's a nephew, says, I'm not washing dishes. He's a nephew. You could say that. I'm the friend, and I can't say that. So Friday night, I was busy washing the dishes while my friend and the rest of the family was sitting on the couch just enjoying, having a good time. You know, you have to help washing the dishes. You have to help loading the dishwasher, taking out the garbage. It's a man's responsibility. The Mishnah Yuma tells us it's something called Trumas Hadeshim. Trumas Hadeshim means taking out the trash. Every single day there is a ash that built up on the Mizbech, and every single morning a Kohen had to go and clean it out and shovel it out. And the Mishnah actually describes how initially they thought, who wants to do that, just taking out the trash, no big deal. But they said, whoever gets it first gets to do it. Turns out there was once a race, and two Kohanim were fighting, and one pushed the other one off the ramp, and he broke his leg, and they said, oh, this is dangerous now. No longer we're having a race. We have to do like a 21st finger type of thing. But we see that they were running to do Trumas Hadeshim, and they were running to take out the trash. When you are the Kohen in your house, you have a responsibility to clean up, to wash dishes if you could help be helpful, and load the dishwasher, take out the garbage, do the laundry. The Beis Mikdash describes how the Kohanim would do laundry in the Beis Mikdash. If there was a stain, if Dam got on the laundry, there's a special way they clean it. That was an avodah of the Kohen, the responsibility of being a Baal Bayis. Cooking. When the animal was shechted and they gave the various parts of the meat to the Kohanim or to the Bailim of the Karban, they didn't eat it raw, they had to roast it. They cooked it, they roasted it. They did it in the Beis Mikdash. That's what a Kohen does. Help cook if you can. Bake. The Kohanim baked in the Beis Mikdash. There's lechem upon him, and there's shtel lechem, and there's karban todah. There are things that the Kohanim and men are capable of doing. They did this in the Beis Mikdash in your house. It's a Mikdash mat. Think about it every single time that you're baking a challah, if your wife doesn't bake it, or you're baking a cake, or if you're cooking meat, you're doing an avodah of the Beis Mikdash. You're doing an avodah of a Kohen in the Beis Mikdash, because this is your small Beis Mikdash, and you're the Kohen. Now, not everything needs to fall on the husband, nor should it fall on the wife, but there has to be some level of partnership, your team here, and you need to assist around the house and doing services for each other. Not every man can cook or bake, and not every woman could cook or bake. Growing up, I would cook and bake all the time. My grandmother and I had special times together. We used to bake cakes, especially for Pesach. Good memories baking cakes with her. I would cook things. My mother would work very late Tuesday nights, so every time I'd call her up, and she'd always tell me each time how to make lasagna, so I'd make lasagna for myself and my siblings. I had no problem cooking and baking. I still don't. My wife doesn't like me in the kitchen so much. I think she's a little intimidated from me, but she tells me I don't clean up. I make too much of a mess, which is true. I know how to cook and bake well, but I don't really know how to clean up very well, so I need to work on that. But the idea is to help out around the house, and there's so many ways, so many things that we just think about what her wife does to keep the house running. If you would assist a little bit here, a little bit there, I mean, we have plenty of free time that we waste. Why not help your wife running the household? So in order to inspire each of us to help out around the house, around the kitchen, around the dining room, and the bedrooms, and making beds and laundry, the key is really changing our perspective. We need to really view ourselves as Kohanim, and that we're working in the Beis HaMikdash. We need to view our spouse as king or queen, show them tremendous respect and desire to serve them. Try to imagine a great tzaddik is coming to your house. I'm sure you'd be on top of the house to make sure everything's clean and neat. You're hosting a big tzaddik, a big rav comes to your house. View your wife as that big tzaddikas. View your husband as that big tzaddik in the house. Help out each other. Make it look presentable. There's so much to do. There's a story of the Baal Tanya. That one time, Rav Shlomo Mikarlin, Zechus Yageinu Aleinu, who was one of the great Talmidim of the Magid Mimezrich, who's older than the Baal Tanya, and he wanted to go visit the Baal Tanya, even though the Baal Tanya was young, he wanted to pay a visit to him. So now in the house of the Baal Tanya, they started preparing. And then during the preparations for the great Tzaddik Reb Shlomo Mikarlin coming, there's a bit of debate in the kitchen between the Rebbetzin and the chef they had. The Rebbetzin Taina that since she's the Baal Bayis here, she needs to cook L'chava the great Tzaddik coming. She should make the food. But the chef said, I've been cooking the past number of years here. I'm the chef here. And now this is my responsibility. I have the zechus of cooking for this great Tzaddik. And now I'm supposed to be preparing the food. So they agreed with each other, the Rebbetzin and the chef, to go speak with the Baal Tanya. And whatever he tells them to do, they'll listen to. So the Baal Tanya tells them that the Rebbetzin should prepare the food, and then the chef should add their proper amount of salt and spices as necessary. Since the food without spices, without seasoning, isn't edible just yet, it's as if the chef made the food as well. So that was the compromise the Baal Tanya made. So since the only responsibility of the chef was just to add the salt and seasoning, so she wants it to be mahadir the mitzvah. So she put a lot of salt on to really make it very, very tasty. Now, if that wasn't enough, while the chicken soup and food was busy cooking over the fire, so one of the daughters of the Baal Tanya walks into the kitchen. She heard that they're preparing a big suda for his great tzaddik of Shomam Karliner was coming to town, coming to the house. She said, I want to be mitzvah for this mitzvah. So I'll make the food better. So she added more salt on her own. When they brought the food to the table, the Alter Rebbe was mechabed Rebbe Shlomo Karliner to eat. He tasted a little bit of the soup. Wasn't able to handle it. It was too salty because everyone put salt in. And so the Baal Tanya felt maybe it wasn't salted enough. He said, maybe it's too bland. So he added some more salt to it. No. Take some, Reb Shlomo. And he refused. So after the Baal Tanya took the soup, and he ate the whole soup without a flinch. And Reb Shlomo Karliner left. He's such a young man, the Baal Tanya, and he already can't taste the gashmias. But what I'm drawing from the story is we see the great kavod they show when a tzaddik like Reb Shlomo Karliner comes to town, comes to your house. If you imagine how your wife is at the tzaddikah, so your husband at the tzaddik, or both of you, to prepare the food for them. Then not let your wife do all the work, but imagine a tzaddik was coming, you want to partake in that preparation as well. So view your wife as a tzaddikah, and then view yourself as the kohen and the melech who's serving in the base of Migdash to make the food, to help out with the cooking, help out with the cleaning. There's an incredible story brought down by the Gra. And the Gra would often go to distant towns just to be in Gullus. You know, he received a lot of respect, of course, in his home, where he lived in Vilna, but he wanted to go sometimes in Gullus where no one would know him. It would be humbling for him. So he told an event that happened once when he was in this Gullus, one of these exiles, self-imposed exiles. He was staying in a particular house for several weeks, and no one, the people who were staying at were very fine people and very exemplary hospitality. And they had a very simple home, but they were very, very, very giving and generous in Hachnas Orchim. Now they had no idea this was the Vilna Gaon. They sensed that he was someone special. There's something special about him. He spent his whole time learning. There's some air of holiness that he gave off. And when he told his host, when the Groh told the host that he was going to leave, so the host said to him, I don't know who you are, but I can see that you are a holy person. You're Heilige Yid.
So it's one thing if I could ask you a favor. Since you just stayed in our home for a few weeks, would you be able to tell us if there's any area in our household that can use some improvement? If there is, would we be grateful if you could let us know as we try to live our lives according to the halacha. So the Vilna Gaon had not come to give mussar, but once the fellow had asked, he decided to share something he had noticed. Chazal tells us in the Gemara Yevamos Daf Samach Beis Mebeis that a man who does the following will merit harmony, will merit shalom in his marriage. Ha'ohevo es ishto kigufo v'machabdo yos migufo. One who loves his wife like himself and honors his wife even more. For example, by buying her nice clothing and jewelry. But I noticed that every morning you made a cup of coffee for your wife while you don't make one for yourself. I know that money is tight, and I presume you don't have enough money for two cups of coffee, but if that's the case, you should split a cup with your wife. Why do you give her more than you give yourself? How does that fall into the category of loving her like you love yourself? And the fellow thanked his guest for his suggestion and explained that if you hear my story, you will understand why I give my wife the coffee instead of sharing it with her or keeping it for myself. Every single morning he made her a cup of coffee. He served her. Listen to this incredible story. And this is brought down from the guru. So the man, the host, explained that as a young boy I was extremely bright and I learned with great diligence. The people in my hometown took note of my talents. As such, when I was only 12 years old, one of the wealthiest people in the city approached my father and offered me his daughter's hand in marriage. My father, who was the town's rabbi and a very poor man, felt that this was an opportunity that was too good to miss. He was thrilled at the prospect of having someone take care of me for the rest of my life. The terms of the engagement were as follows. I would learn for the next 6 years under a private rabbi hired by my father-in-law, who would help me maximize my potential. When I turned 18, I would marry the wealthy man's daughter, who would be furnished with an expensive amount of dowry. In addition, my father-in-law would support us after marriage, so I could continue to learn. The next 6 years were wonderful, great learning. But things took a turn for the worse. Right before my 18th birthday, just a few weeks before the wedding, calamity struck. My future father-in-law's ships, which were all at sea, capsized in a horrendous storm. He was left penniless. My future father-in-law could barely feed his family at home, let alone provide his daughter with a handsome dowry. He certainly wasn't going to be able to take care of me for the rest of my life. Thus, with a heavy heart, my father called off the wedding. The broken engagement caused my future wife and her whole family great embarrassment. One day they were on top of the world, and the next day they were penniless. They had no choice but to leave the city and try to restart their lives somewhere else. In the meantime, other wealthy people in the town were eager to offer their daughter to me, another one of the rich men in the city, a well-respected man, and eventually I married, a few weeks later, his daughter. It was a lavish wedding attended by many distinguished people. Our marriage was going well, and we didn't have any worries. Everything was absolutely perfect and blissful, and then suddenly everything changed. One morning, I woke up with a few blisters on my skin, which at first seemed minor. Over the next few days, however, the sores began to spread. By the time a few weeks had gone by, entire body was covered with oozing lesions. My wife assumed that it was some sort of infection which would soon pass. However, the doctor I visited believed that my condition was contagious. In fact, he said that my wife and I should not reside in the same house. And one day my father-in-law came to me and said that it appeared I would never recover from my disease. It would only be prudent and fair on my part if I give my wife a divorce. I was devastated. I begged him for more time. He was insistent and left me with no choice, so I gave my wife a get, and once more I was all alone. The people of the city pitied on me and allowed me to stay in the local hostel, provide me food and water and so on. One day a poor man came from our town, from out of town. His downtrodden appearance told me that he too had suffered in his lifetime. We would tell each other tales of woe and we shared in each other's misery. After spending a few days with me, he had made a suggestion. I know that you are a scholar, but let's face it, your disease is preventing you from marrying a normal girl. I have a daughter who is afflicted with a similar disease. Would you consider marrying her? Although I was unhappy with the suggestion, I realized I had very few options. If I wanted a partner in life, I was going to have to settle. And so I agreed to meet his daughter. I only met the young lady for a few moments, yet I was filled with a pity for her and decided to marry her. Who could better understand how she felt than I? When we married, there was no lavish ceremony and no dowry. When the wedding was over, I noticed that my new wife was crying bitterly, which made me very sad as well. At first, she seemed inconsolable. Eventually, I managed to calm her down and got her to tell me why she was crying. This is the pitiful story she told. My father was a very wealthy man, and I was engaged to one of the finest, most brilliant scholars in the region who wanted to learn for the rest of his life. My father was going to support us to make my chassan's dream a reality, but then one day my father lost his entire fortune. As my wife told her story, I began to wonder, it all sounded so familiar. I thought that I knew the ending of the story, but I kept quiet and let her continue. After my father, she went on, lost his money. The chassan's father insisted that since my father was unable to keep his end of the deal, the engagement should be broken. I became depressed and disheartened. Eventually, I developed a skin infection, and now, here I am, married to a pauper with the same kind of illness. As she finished speaking, I cannot help but smile. My wife could not understand why I was smiling, nor could she understand why I asked her for the name of her original hometown. Nevertheless, she told me the name, and sure enough, it was the same town where I had grown up. However, my wife still had no idea what I was driving at until I blurted it out. I was the young man you were supposed to marry. I was the one who was engaged to you. It was my father who broke the engagement. That night, we cried for the pain of the past and dreamt about our dreams for the future. Remarkably, a few short weeks later, both of us were healed from the skin ailments. It was the Almighty's way of showing us that we were destined for each other. Although we thought we could orchestrate things in a different manner, what is divinely ordained will be. After causing my dear wife much heartache and pain, I learned that lesson the hard way. And the host finished his story and now turns his attention to the question at hand, to the Vilna Gaon. My dear guest, you ask me why I make my wife a cup of coffee every day instead of keeping it for myself or sharing it. The answer is, as you have heard. I caused her tremendous grief, heartache, and pain. Thus I decided that throughout the course of our marriage, I would do whatever I could to make it up to her. My small token cup of coffee every day is a reminder of how much I owe her. And so it's true, although we don't have struggles like this, Baruch Hashem, but all the effort our wife puts in to keeping the household running, from shopping to cooking to baking to cleaning to washing dishes to laundry and making beds and packing the kids' lunch, all of that, a small token of appreciation by making a cup of coffee a day, by doing something, help out around the house. That's a small token showing your appreciation for everything a wife does. And that's really what it means to be a melech, to be a kohen, to be responsible, to serve, to slave, to make sure everything in the house is running properly. That's responsibility, and that's the best way to bring about Elul, Ani L'Dodi V'Dodi Li, to be melech malcha, to be king and queen of the home, as we're, of course, showing HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he's melech malcha, and melech HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We should all be zocha, have tremendous shalom bias in these days of Yimei Ratzon, and to be zocha to the day where we realize that we are king and queen of our home, which means we have responsibility, and we should all realize, and the world should realize, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the king, melech malcha, and melech HaKadosh Baruch Hu.